Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Today we're going to focus a little on growing herbs. It's a great way to garden year-round. And Erin Presley is with us. For the first time, she's the herb garden horticulturist at Obrick Gardens in Madison. She also manages the wildflower and pond gardens there. So we'll talk about growing, using, and preserving herbs today. We'll also take a look at wildflower and pond gardening and other general gardening questions as well as we move along today. She knows a lot about a whole lot of things. So maybe your pond needs to be winterized, or maybe you're wondering, how do I grow herbs in my house? Then it never seems to work. Join the conversation. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us your question, or maybe you got a photo too, a garden photo you want to include. We'd love to see that too. You do that by going on email to ideas@wpr.org, and we'd love to hear from you. And Erin Presley, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Larry.
Great to have you with us today. First, talk a little about the gardens and more, a little more about what you do there.
Well, we're kind of putting the garden to bed for the season right now. At Ulbrich, we tend to leave a lot of our perennial plant material standing over the winter for pollinator support. So there's still a lot to see. And even throughout the really cold months, we do a really nice job with winter containers with evergreens and colorful branches. Some of our containers are still full of pansies and some rudbeckias and some colder season crops still hanging on. And of course, the fall color is just absolutely superb right now.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, the Japanese maples are really at their peak. We have some beautiful beeches. So there's just, no matter what time of year it is, there's just so much to see at Ulbrich. It's really delightful.
And then right in the middle of the winter, you can go to the dome and sit inside and look at all that wonderful tropical plant.
Yes, we encourage visitation throughout the year. The conservatory is only $2, so you can't really get, much of a cheaper outing than that. And the outdoor gardens are always free. So, come take a little spin around outside. And once you start feeling that chill in your bones, you can head inside and warm up again.
How do you use herbs in the gardens there?
Well, I'm in charge of the herb garden, so we take a very broad view of herbs. I would think of an herb as really any plant that has an intimate connection with humans and a way to be used by humans. So we have, and actually the theme of this year's herb fair is beyond parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. So it's kind of taking a more expansive view of how plants can just affect people in their daily lives. So we have culinary herbs. We also grow herbs that are used for natural dyes. We have a touch and smell bed, which has all plants that are fragrant or fuzzy. We're trying to learn about and display some of the more popular perennial and superfood crops. So we're getting into growing goji berries, honey berries. We just planted a really nice asparagus hedge. Really, you name it, we've got herbs of all types. And not only in the herb garden do we use a lot of herbs and vegetables, but a lot of those plants are very cold hardy. So especially in the spring and fall, we use them just for general display throughout the other gardens. And I would say that kind of edible landscaping is a real theme throughout all of our garden spaces.
It's really cool. And Saturday, the gardens, that's the location for the Madison Herb Society's annual herb fair. And you'll be a speaker.
We're really pumped for the herb fair on Saturday. Like I said, it is hosted by the Madison Herb Society, and this year's theme is Beyond Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme. And it just focuses on how you can really start to feel the effect and use herbs in just your everyday life, because herbs they add just such a richness and depth to the human experience, I think.
Yeah.
The more that you can just introduce people to real simple ways to incorporate herbs or learn a new herb, I think can really have a significant impact on really your quality of living.
So great speakers, growing herbs for tea. They're at 9:30 in the morning, then at 11:30 cooking with Indian herbs and spices. Ooh, that sounds good too. And then 1:30 wreaths and swags from your herbal harvest. Wow, that's a lot.
I know, it's a good lineup. There's also a wide variety of local vendors that will be offering different herbal wares for sale. So it should be, it runs from 9 to 3 on Saturday. So there's no admission fee or anything like that. So please stop on down to Ulbrich for the herb fair.
Well, we have callers online. Actually, Vivian has something for us from Green Bay. Hi, Vivian.
Hello. Been unsuccessful growing cilantro indoors and outdoors.
Oh.
Other herbs do quite well, but I can't pull that off.
Cilantro is not one of those herbs that pops up whenever you see an article about growing herbs indoors.
Right, right. It's a little...
it's a tough one.
A little difficult probably to grow inside, definitely. I would say if you were going to be trying that, your best bet is going to be starting like a little pot of cilantro outside in the late fall, and then just try to bring it in and kind of eke it along throughout the winter in your very, very sunniest spot. A lot of people struggle to grow herbs inside because they really are high light plants. And so unless you have some sort of almost greenhouse type space inside, or
a darn good south-facing window.
A really good south-facing window, and definitely some supplemental lighting is going to help you with that too.
But you can't grow it outside either, Vivian?
No, that's not been successful, and I use elevated beds. Planters.
They're in planters outside as well.
Yeah, the other herbs do well because there is a lot of sunlight there, but the cilantro just doesn't seem to take.
Are you trying to start with like established plants that you're buying from a nursery, or are you sowing seeds yourself?
Tried both, mostly established plants, though.
Okay. I would say... usually with cilantro, it goes to bolt so fast that seeding is a little bit easier way to really get it going and have a supply throughout the season. And a lot of cilantro seeds will just sprout from seeds that fell from last year's crop. So you could be sowing that in your pots even very early in the spring. And then if you're finding that you're not having a lot of luck with it, just keep sowing those seeds, keep them moist. Because I would say that a lot of people who have cilantro, once you get the hang of it, you have more than you could ever use. And it just keeps coming up and coming up.
So the seed's probably the best way to go. I know with parsley, for example, you're probably better off if you're starting from seed, you need to put it in warm water to break the seed coat, is what I've always been told. But you don't need to do that for cilantro.
I don't think so. I've usually had good luck just tossing those seeds out there early enough that they get some nice spring rains. And generally for me, they pretty much take off.
There you go, Vivian. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Chris in Milwaukee will give you a chance. Hi, Chris. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, thank you. I have two questions. One is overwintering spinach, Swiss chard, and possibly peas. I planted those crops pretty late, like beginning of August, and they didn't do well. But they're coming up, but I didn't get a crop from them. I'm wondering if I can overwinter any of them. And also, what about cutting my raspberries? Should I wait till spring, or should I do it now? Thank you.
Yeah. Why would you cut the strawberries? I'm not sure why you'd do that.
Did she say raspberries?
Oh, I'm sorry. In my head, I heard strawberries. Raspberries, okay.
The raspberries, traditionally, you would just cut down in the spring. I'm not sure if it would do any harm to them to cut them down in the fall if you just wanted to get it out of the way and get the work done. But typically, I know most people, and whenever I've been managing raspberries, would do that in the springtime.
Probably depend on when they are, if they're ever bearing or if they're fall bearing. There might be a difference there.
Yeah, I think most people have fall bearing raspberries, in which the entirety of the canes, like all of the canes,
all of them are gone,
are cut to the ground every spring. And then with the ever bearing raspberries, I think that you identify which parts of it fruited over this past year, and you just cut off the bit at the tip that already had fruit, and then the bottom part of the cane is able to fruit next year. So that you would need to identify which type of berries you had and look into that a little more carefully. But I think both of those actions would be done in the spring.
I don't think you can overwinter peas, and I don't not sure, I don't think spinach and chard work very well either. Chard might.
I think for any of those things to overwinter them very well, you're probably going to need some sort of protection, like a floating row cover over a little, you know, hoop or garden box or something like that that you would be making, or even like a rudimentary cold frame. I would think that spinach is definitely, I know a lot of market growers grow overwintered spinach that's coming out of like an unheated greenhouse. So that's probably going to be a pretty easy one. The chard, I'm not sure. Maybe the smaller chard plants would do well with that, but I'm not sure if you had like a full scale chard plant going into the winter, if that would be able to hack it under cover.
Yeah, they definitely need to be under cover.
For any of those things.
For
certainly.
Any of that to happen, Chris. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Erin Presley, our guest today, she is the herb garden horticulturist at Olbrich Gardens. Great to have her with us today as we talk about lots of different things going on in the garden. We're zeroing a little on herbs, but you can join in with your garden question as well. The number's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Speaking of emails, Chris in Adams says his dill is very small. The stuff sees at the farmer's market is always big and full, and hers never gets that way. How can she get hers to produce her dill?
One thing that I would recommend with dill is that's another herb that grows really readily from seed. So I'm not sure if the plants that you have are something that you're buying as a started plant in the nursery, but dill is easy to grow from seed. And a lot of herbs, I would say, like cilantro, basil, dill, are all going to be a lot more productive if you're sowing them from seed versus buying an established plant. So that might have something to do with it. Other than that, definitely just full sun is important. I don't think dill is a particularly heavy feeder. So I would say just keep sticking those seeds in the ground. And maybe if you want to get a little bit of a, you know, light fertilizer, something like a, you know, Milorganite or nothing real intense, that can't really hurt them.
So there you go. Thanks so much for calling. On to Aaron in Sturgeon Bay. Aaron, hello.
Hello, Erin and Larry. Thank you for taking my call. And your guest is Erin. The last name is Presley, did you say?
Yes.
And I do Elvis impersonations.
Oh, my gosh. Can you do a little something right now?
You know I can't be fine. I sit no more in long.
This is like a radio dream come true.
Good job, Erin.
Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you. Thank you very much. My question is, I have a avocado tree I grew from a pit. It was an organic avocado, and I grew it from a pit. It was one of only six that actually took root. And now it's been several years, and it's about 5 feet tall. And I'm wondering if it's ever going to fruit out, or if I need two trees, or am I doing something wrong, or maybe it needs a bigger pot. I'm not sure.
Erin?
I recently was listening to some back episodes of Garden Talk. So I do not have personal experience with this issue, but I can give you a good answer that I heard from an avocado expert who had called into the show himself. And this gentleman had been a landscaper or something in California. And he had really readily observed the fruiting and flowering patterns on the avocados. So one of the things that he mentioned is that an individual avocado plant has separate female and male flowers. I'm not sure if your plant has even flowered at all.
Has it flowered, Aaron?
No, it just has leaves.
Okay, right, well, that's the first problem.
That's the biggest problem right there.
So it's probably just not big enough or mature enough. But even if you were to see those flowers, I think you would have to collect pollen off of the male flower and physically pollinate the female flower.
And the one problem is that they don't flower at exactly the same time. So the male and the female. So as I recall that particular response, the person said the reason that they were able to do it in, like, California, for example, is they have a lot of avocado trees growing at once, because that male, I think, only lasts a day, that male flower.
I think he even said maybe the female was only open for a few hours or something like that.
So we're
pretty far from having avocados right now.
So the avocados, it's really, if you get them to flower, which is a challenge in and of itself, and I'm not even sure how to do that, the flowers, as Aaron said, as a good listener to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network, had a good answer, and they don't flower. The flowers don't come out, the male and the female, at the same time. So you need to actually have more of those plants, because a different plant might have a different day or whatever for collecting. So there you go, Aaron.
Look, I'll look away. I won't try to intrude on their alone time when I do that.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. Well, I appreciate your call. Jonathan in McFarland has something for us. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, appreciate the call.
Doing very well.
Yeah, my wife and I just bought a new house and a new development, so there aren't a lot of trees, and I wanted to put, the backyard faces everybody else's backyard except for one house, and I was just wondering what you would suggest. We don't want a tree that's going to overtake the house, so we don't want, like, a 50-foot oak, but, like, I don't know what kind of tree to kind of plant in the backyard that would offer a little bit of privacy to block the neighbor's house or windows, but doesn't grow so tall that it goes taller than that the two-story house. Any suggestions?
Sure. Well, I would say that one thing that's important when you're doing any sort of screening for privacy is kind of mix it up in your border. Then if you have a particular type of plant that isn't very prosperous for you or fails, it's not like you're relying on a monoculture of just one or the other variety of plant. Definitely arborvitae always make really nice screens. We use at Ulbrich a lot of Holmstrup arborvitae, which stay a little bit on the smaller side and also are less prone to splitting open like a lot of arborvitae that you see if they get heavy snow loads. So that would be a nice evergreen option. One plant that I've been really excited about seeing used for screening recently is at Ulbrich we have a neat little patio space, and it's screened by a hedge of Carpinus caroliniana musselwood. So that's a native plant that is tolerant of shade to full sun, not picky about soil or moisture conditions, and can be pruned really readily to stay narrow. It frequently grows with low branches if you wanted to, your screening to extend all the way to the ground. And then those trees would really only get to be about 20 feet tall. Right now they have just fabulous, fabulous fall color. So that's Carpinus caroliniana musselwood. Species to that one is Astraea virginiana, hophorn beam. And both of those are really nice multi-season plants. Another kind of smaller native tree that makes a good screen, has some lower branches but doesn't get too huge, is serviceberry, Amelanchier grandiflora. And those are also great because they have nice white flowers in the early spring for pollinators. They have a wonderful edible fruit.
Yeah, great.
Which tastes like a blueberry. And then, again, beautiful fall color, nice smooth bark. So those would be some good options.
There you go, Jonathan. Thanks so much for calling. Erin Presley, our guest today, the herb garden horticulturist at Olbrich Garden. She also manages the wildflower and the pond gardens at Olbrich. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer. Dave Potratz, our engineer for Garden Talk. Taking a look at successful herb gardening and other kinds of gardening as well with our two guests, with our guest today, Erin Presley, the herb garden horticulturist at Olbrich Gardens. And as you're learning, she knows a lot about all kinds of plants. So it's great to have her with us. You can join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Lori emailed to ask how the folks at Olbrich overwinter the large succulents. They look too large to move into an indoor location.
Oh, wow. You would be surprised the things that we move into an indoor location. You know, Lori, you may be thinking about, we do have one really huge agave Americana that we had donated to us last winter. And that one, unfortunately, is not going to be making the trip inside this year. But we have we overwinter a lot of the succulents in the basement of our office building under grow lights. So it's kind of hot and dry down there once we get those lights pumping. And then a lot of the succulents that are a little bit more cold hardy, we put into just a barely heated greenhouse, so it stays just above freezing. So I think those would be good candidates for overwintering in like a garage where it didn't get too cold, but down to, 40 degrees or so is fine for a lot of succulents.
Mark in Hayward emailed that he planted June-bearing strawberries for the first time this year. How should he protect the bed over winter?
I would say just maybe, put a little splash of mulch around all of the strawberries, and it probably couldn't hurt to throw some evergreen boughs or something like that over the top. But in general, I think if they were planted early enough to have gotten a little bit of root system established, you shouldn't really expect much winter mortality in any case.
Usually have some snow in way up there in Hayward,
yeah,
the northern part of the state. And if you are going to put some mulch on, probably wait for the ground to freeze before you do that, I think.
Yeah, not a bad idea.
So you don't get the freezing, thawing kind of business going on. Yeah, so otherwise, I think you're good to go. Thanks so much for calling. Chuck in Prairie du Sac, your turn. Hi, Chuck.
Good morning, Larry and Aaron. My question is on water lilies. We have a pond that's about 3.5 feet deep, and my water lilies are in pots. If I plant them down in the 3.5 feet, they grow a lot of green before they one or two flowers. So this last year, I brought them up higher. I still got a lot of green and only a couple flowers. What's the ideal depth for having those water lilies?
All right. Do you have water lilies in the ponds that you guys use? Or
I do not have any water lilies in my ponds. However, I know that the other gardeners have. So first of all, they're planting the water lilies in that special clay substrate. And then there are some little fertilizer tablets that kind of stick into the clay in those pots. So those are slow release. So you might have a little bit of a fertility issue there, that they're not getting enough fertilizer to promote flowering. And I know that they also early in the spring start the water lilies higher up in the water as the initial leaves are forming, and then as they get bigger and bigger, they can drop out. Usually they're stacked on cinder blocks, so they'll slowly drop them down to the bottom as they grow bigger, right?
So you just don't leave them in the same place all the time. So you start them high, a few inches from the top?
Right. In the spring when they're just getting going, and then by later in the summer, they've gotten almost down to, most of our ponds are about, not too much more than 3 feet deep. So kind of about like you're dealing with.
There you go, Chuck. Thank you very much for calling. And on to Jane in Milwaukee. Hi, Jane.
Oh, hi. Two questions. One, what would be a good source to get plants for growing goji berries? And two, same question about growing hemp, but do you have any idea about how to make use hemp to make CBD oil.
Wow.
Well, I can definitely speak to the goji berries. We have some goji berries that we are growing at Ulbrich right now, and those came from a wholesaler, Midwest Ground Covers. But I know a lot of growers, nursery growers around wherever you are in Wisconsin are probably ordering from Midwest Ground Covers. So I would say go into your local garden center and just put in a request and say, can you get a hold of some of these for me for next year? Another good option as far as a mail order source for bare root plants is Stark Brothers Nursery. So that's S-T-A-R-K. And they have a full line of all different types of fruits. So I'm sure they have a few options for the goji berries.
There you go. Thank you so much. In the terms of the hemp, that process, we haven't talked, I did a whole show on CBD oil just recently, but we really never, we were talking about getting from, sources that already had done that. And so I honestly have no knowledge of how to do it, and apparently you don't either, Erin.
Yeah, I think that as far as that process has gotten in Wisconsin, it's really more geared toward like an industrial scale grower, and I think they're accepting permit applications for the upcoming growing year, like next year. But I am not sure as a homeowner how you would get a hold of any, seeds or anything of that sort.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And if you once you have them, how to get the oil out of them? Well, that's something. Maybe we'll have to ponder that and come up with something for another garden talk show.
Yeah, all us sore gardeners could use some of that CBD oil, though. I think after a day of slaving out in the yard.
Thanks, Jane. Sally in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
To know about chrysanthemums that are kind of their flowers are kind of gone, or people throw them away at this time of year, and I wondered if they're able to be replanted so that they will come back next year, and how you would do that.
All right. I would say if you were really vested in having mums in your garden from year to year, you're going to be a lot better off planting them out as soon as you could, so that mum you would buy in August, put it in the ground, let it get established, and then it has a lot better chance of overwintering. Although I am always real tempted when you see those mums that get kicked out to the curb. And I think those you would have a decent chance of being able to plant out in the spring if you overwintered them in a warmer spot, like maybe in your garage where they're not going to freeze. If you just try to stick that mum in the ground right now, it may or may not be able to make it very well through the winter. But if you could keep it, just dormant in a cool spot where it wouldn't freeze over the winter, plant it out in the spring, you'd probably have some pretty good luck.
Yeah, and if you were going to try and do it now, well, good luck on that. But if you stuck them right next to the house.
yes. And definitely the thing that kills mums pretty frequently is too much moisture. So just put them in a real dry spot and they'll have a little bit better chance of being able to make it too.
I've had some plants outside, different flowering plants that are not supposed to overwinter, and they do because they're right next to the house.
Yeah. Very, very good point.
Thanks, Sally. Appreciate the call. You can join in, too. Hey, open lines get you on pretty quickly. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. I don't know if we brought up basil yet and growing that indoors. That's a tough one to plant to do indoors, a tough herb. The globe types, the smaller globe types.
Yeah, the little like spicy globe basils. Those are a good candidate, I think.
Those are a really better candidate than any of the other basils, almost for sure.
I would like to just put in a little basil plug right now. I don't know if any of you folks out there have suffered from the basil downy mildew disease that has been prevalent with some of the rainy weather over the past past few summers. And I recently this year started growing a disease-resistant variety of basil. It's Eleonora. So it's E-L-E-O-N-O-R-A. That is specifically bred for resistance to that basil downy mildew. And I had one plant of Eleonora that I started in May, and it literally grew beautifully through the entire summer.
Oh.
It was clean, productive. It's like a Genovese style basil, so a nice large leaf, glossy green, kind of that classic Italian flavor. But I tell you, that basil just so outperformed any of the other basils that did ultimately succumb to that disease, at least in my garden.
And the taste was there? I mean,
Very good. Very, very good basil. Yeah. Yeah.
Eleonora,
yep. So, and that one we always grow for our spring plant sale, which happens the Mother's Day weekend. So if you're having trouble, I think you can get seeds for that from Johnny's. But if you're just looking for a plant, come check out the plant sale and we'll hook you up with one.
All right, there we go. And again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Oh, lots of callers coming in. Janet in Oak Creek, we go to you next. Hi, Janet.
Oh, hello. Question regarding amaryllis bulbs. I have two beautiful bulbs that I put outside in summer, and I brought them in when the frost was apparent, and they've been sitting in my garage since. I believe with amaryllis bulbs, what I've been doing is, in the past years, putting them in a dark, cool area without much water. So I'm just wondering, since they're in a lighted garage with windows, will I have any blooms, or will they be, if I start the process now, will it be in summer, or what should I do?
I typically, so the whole idea with the amaryllis is they need to undergo a dormancy period, complete dormancy, before they're able to re-sprout and flower. So I would suggest getting them away from that light, and with my amaryllis, I put them in a completely dark closet, and I totally stop watering them and just let them dry down, let all that foliage dry down until it turns just like brown and crispy. And then you can leave it at that state for, you know, anything from a few weeks to probably a month or two. Then unpot them, get rid of all the old potting soil, cut off those brown, crunchy leaves, put them into new soil, so repot it, and then give it a little bit of water just to get the growth started again. You don't want to overwater it when it's just in the bulb form. And then as it starts growing leaves, you can increase the water just a little bit, and that's when you're going to see that new flower. But it definitely does need to undergo complete dormancy, where you take it, you know, totally out of the light, stop watering it, and let all of that foliage that grew over the summer die back and the energy to go back into the bulb.
Well, now, can I open up the closet to get my hat out, or is it... It's not like poinsettia.
No. It's not necessarily day length dependent, but you really want to impede it from growing at all. So I would say take it out of the light. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Janet, does that help?
It does. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, what do we got? Bill in Green Bay. Your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Thank you. Say, listen, here's my question. I have put in a rose garden. It's along the side of a house, and I have a variety of roses, knockouts, hybrids, and wintering them. Now, I have a plan to mound them with soil and, you know, and cover them, but the leaves are still on, and the leaves are full of black spot. Now, should I wait until the leaves fall, collect all the black spot leaves, and then go ahead with my preparation for winter?
Yeah, I think you're definitely on to something there. You could put off that overwintering process until, you know, even December, as long as you can still get out there comfortably and be able to rake up those old leaves. I would definitely let them all drop before you do any sort of covering on those plants.
Yeah, absolutely. And you kind of get rid of them as they fall off, you know, so you don't get caught with some sudden snowfall or something out in the middle of nowhere. But you're on the right track there, Bill. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You brought me some drinks.
I did. I'm getting geared up for my herbal tea talk tomorrow or on Saturday.
So you brought me, you're the ginseng maven over at Olbrich, I guess.
A maven yet. Wow. That's exciting.
And you brought me some ginseng, a ginseng drink.
Right. Well, one of my real passions, I guess, as a herb gardener and horticulturist is I'm really interested in Wisconsin ginseng and its value and its history. And I think it's really amazing that we can have such a, crop that is so prized on the world market that really comes not only from the United States, but specifically from Wisconsin. Wisconsin exports 95% of the ginseng that leaves the United States and on the world market. The Wisconsin ginseng is known by name and is considered to be like absolutely superior to ginseng grown anywhere else. So I brought in, brought a few
earthy,
little samples here.
Taste to it. I love it.
Yeah, it has kind of a little bit of like a licorice-y sweetness mm-hmm. and then a little bit of an earthy bitterness that comes in at the end. And it really grows on you. Do you feel smarter and more alert?
Already.
Me too.
Well, and I'm smart enough to also pick up the next cup of chia limeade in sort of an honor of limey, my lime tree, she has many, many limes on her right now. But this is a chia limeade.
Right.
Tell me about it.
So chia is another crop that I am just really, oddly fascinated with. But chia is actually a species of salvia, and it's an annual. And so normally chia is native, it's native to Mexico. The Mexican state of Chiapas is actually named after the chia plant, and it was known to the Aztecs and the Mayans because the chia is so nutritious that they could take just a few tablespoons with them when they were out on the march, and the warriors would be able to, go all day and do everything that they needed to do just with this little bit of chia. So I got hooked up with some northern hardy chia strains from some researchers at the University of Kentucky who are working on chia breeding for horse feed. So they would have these great pictures on their website about this like old gray mare horse who had eaten, chia for 2 weeks, and then suddenly it was like Black Beauty was in the room. But the chia plants are really beautiful. They have really nice little blue flowers, and then as the season winds down, the seeds are ripe. So with my volunteer crews, we spend a decent amount of time sifting and winnowing all of those chia seeds so we can have seeds to use and grow for the next year, too.
Well, not only am I smarter from the ginseng, but now I have all this extra energy from the, from the chia limeade. That's really good.
Yeah, it is. So, and the if you folks out there have never eaten chia seed before, it is really high in essential fatty acids. So when the seeds are exposed to a little bit of water, they kind of get this jelly-like covering that makes them like a little slimy, but in a good way. So they're good in the limeade. They kind of just slide right down. Yeah,
yeah, they're great in the limeade. I love it. Is this... these chia pets that were always sold over Christmas time, where the
right
is that the chia plant?
I'm not really sure. I would certainly think so.
I would assume it would be, but we don't know that for sure. But we're smarter and we have more energy now that we have the ginseng drink and the chia limeade. Larry Mueller here with my guest, having a lot of fun with Aaron Presley, the herb garden horticulturist at Olbrich Gardens. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. And for this edition of Garden Talk, we have Aaron Presley with us. She's the herb garden horticulturist at Olbrich Gardens. She also manages the wildflower and pond gardens at Olbrich. And as you can tell, if you've been listening in, she can answer a whole variety of questions. We've zeroed a bit on herbs, but other questions are welcome as well at 1-800-642-1234. She is going to be actually giving a talk on growing herbs for tea at Saturday's annual herb fair, and speaking at 9:30, that event runs from 9 to 3 at Olbrich Gardens in Madison. So great to have her along. And Todd in Madison emailed to ask if you have any tips for overwintering rosemary. He planted some in the garden, wants to bring it in for winter, hasn't had much luck with it in the past.
All right. I have to say that I, too, am trying to overwinter my rosemary that I grew out in one of my flower beds this summer. The one thing that is going to help you a lot, though, if you're trying to bring rosemary in, is to grow that plant in a pot throughout the entirety of the summer. It's a lot more stressful to take something that was growing in the ground, try to put it in a pot, and bring it inside all, you know, in this fall time frame. So we have a lot better luck with rosemaries that were potted throughout the summer and growing and establishing a nice root system in their pot, and then bringing that pot inside. And then one thing that is really helpful is a lot of times the drastic decrease in the light is what's really hard on the rosemaries. So from outside in your sunny location, it can help to move it into a little bit of shade, some slight shade, before you bring it all the way into the house. And then the other thing that is helpful for the rosemaries during the winter is they are from a Mediterranean climate where they get most of their water in the winter. So you don't want to overwater it, but you want to keep it actually, you know, somewhat consistently moist in your home over the winter.
That's a really, really good tip. Rosemary's, it's tougher. It's, if you look at what are the 9 or 10 best herbs to grow indoors, rosemary's almost never on that list.
Yeah, rosemary's going to be tricky. And I also know that a lot of the more prostrate or creeping type rosemaries are a little bit easier to overwinter inside than the real upright ones.
Well, let's take another call. Cindy and Ripon, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Well, I planted morning glories. And I had a trellis, and I got tons of vines and leaves. They climbed up the house. They were in the gutters going towards the roof, but I had like 10 blooms.
Well, it sounds like you had really good growth, but not a lot of blooms. Sometimes that's a fertility, maybe a little too much nitrogen, Erin?
Yeah, I would say morning glories are one of those things that they like to have a lot of flowers. They like to be growing a little on the lean side. So I would say don't give those plants any, or for next year if you're trying again, don't give them any supplemental fertilizer. I'm hoping that you're trying to grow those in full sun, because definitely if you grow them in any kind of shade, the morning glories won't really have any flowers. And the other thing with morning glories is they do like it kind of hot and dry. And there are certain types of plants where if they just get too much consistent rain over the summer, they don't get quite the amount of stress that they need to initiate like flower formation. So it's possible that just the kind of lush growing conditions kind of hampered their, because plants respond, you know, they know it's time to set seed when they're stressed out and they need to make the next generation of plants. So that's another possibility, that just the amounts of water kind of hampered the flowering.
Yeah, that's a great, great point. Thank you, Cindy. And let's go to Diane in East Troy. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Larry. I had two honeysuckle vines growing up. I have a large decorative fence, and this was the third year for them, and they were just beautiful this day. You could just tell they were fully matured. They were flowering beautifully in June. And around the end of June, we had a ton of rain in a short period of time, in like a week or something. And both of them got some kind of fungal infection and started dropping leaves. And they got gray and dried up and dropped. The vine lived. It looked dead. It looked like it was dead. But the vines both lived. And then later, new growth started coming out of the top. And these are probably 12-foot-long vines right now.
Oh.
All right. And my question was, you don't cut them back. You just leave them on the fence, and then they start growing again in the spring. But I'm really worried about all the the infected foliage and all that kind of stuff. Should I try cutting those back? Because they look really lousy. I mean, they look really bad. But again, I did have new, healthier-looking growth out of the very top of it.
Okay.
I would say that if you want to cut it back a little bit, that's not going to hurt you, especially with how vigorous honeysuckle vines are. And also cutting it back or possibly thinning it out a little bit might help in subsequent years to allow more air circulation throughout the leaves, so that you're not having that fungal pressure build up with the humidity of having, you know, quite as much foliage in there. And then the other thing with any kind of fungal pathogen or any really, you know, spotty leaf problems is it's probably a good idea when the leaves do drop to rake them up and just get them out of there.
Yeah, for sure. There you go, Diane. Thank you. Darlene in Viroqua, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi, Larry. I love your program. I listen to it all the time.
Thank you.
Yes. I have a gardenia that insists on its leaves turning yellow. And I have tried everything I can think of for bugs and everything, and I can find no answer. Can you help me?
Well, a lot of times leaves turn yellow when there's too much water. That comes to my mind anyway, Aaron.
Yeah, that seems pretty plausible. I guess the other thing would be is if it has been, you know, in its pot for a real long time and it has been turning increasingly yellow, maybe you have a little bit of, like, fertilizer deficiency going on. But especially with plants that are, you know, being grown indoors and a little finicky like the gardenia, overwatering could turn that yellow real fast.
Yeah. So there you go. Does that help, Darlene?
I don't know.
Well, have you been watering it a lot or...?
I just don't know. So you think maybe possibly an additive like fertilizer?
It's possible that, and don't overwater it.
Okay. All right, I'll do that.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Do you ever do, you know, there's this old, the story is you stick your finger into the soil, the plant, the pot, down to the first knuckle.
Right, down to the first knuckle. I think that's a good rule of thumb.
And then if it's damp all the way down... That's plenty.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah, there you go. And Patricia and Madison, your turn. Hi, Patricia.
Good morning, Larry and Aaron. Previously, someone called in about wintering over chrysanthemums. And yes, planting them near the house foundation where it's warmer is a good idea. But I have found some success with putting back where my vegetable garden is, any place to put them, and mound them over with soil like you would do with a rose bush.
Oh,
nice.
Put a marker there that you know what's under there, that mound, you know, the following spring. And I have had several plants come back.
Well, so you just mound them completely?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Like you do the base, you know, the graft of a rose bush.
Well, that's sure worth a try. Thank you, Patricia.
6-8 inches, whatever, 10 inches of soil over there. And in springtime, you know, remove it gradually, and maybe they're still alive.
Yeah. Well, it's worth a try. Thank you very much for calling. Gardeners are always experimenters, and that's a good experiment to give a try to. Thanks, Patricia. Lucy in Black Creek, your turn. Hi, Lucy.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about tarragon.
Okay.
I planted tarragon in a raised square foot garden, and it did great for a few years, and then it just up and died. So I pulled it out.
Yeah.
And next year, something weird came up. It looks like tarragon, but it doesn't taste like tarragon. So I've been trying to pull it out, and it just year after year, this weedy, weird thing keeps coming up on me. Could it be some throwback, or do I just have some copycat weed that came up?
Probably got a copycat weed, but maybe the seeds.
I guess that's possible. I would just say get rid of whatever you've got there and try to get a new tarragon plant from an established nursery. And the tarragon can be pretty finicky. It definitely is going to like a lot of drainage, not too hot. So it's not atypical that you would have one that worked well for you for 2 or 3 years and then just croaked off.
Yeah, that's pretty common, actually. And really, tarragon, you want the plant. You don't want the seeds. You don't want to plant them from seed.
Yeah, I think that's true. That's a tarragon is actually a species of Artemisia.
So get the plant and start all over. Again, Lucy, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. Well, have you, you know, I was thinking one more thing about herbs here and chives. Chives are about the easiest thing there is in the whole world to grow indoors, isn't it? Aren't they?
I like chives, and also garlic chives are a nice option
garlic
for indoors.
Chives.
They have a little bit more structure than, you know, are a little bit stiffer in their habit than regular chives. So they could, you know, hold up and maybe even look a little bit nicer inside.
Yeah, they'd look nicer and a little bit different flavor there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, a little bit more of a spicy garlic versus the oniony flavor of the traditional chives.
So do you have some of those in your own home?
I do not. I have so many herbs at work, especially things that smell like onion. I would say in the herb garden, it either smells great or it smells like onions. So I tend to grow other things at home.
Well, and the other one that you can, that you better be growing in a pot, and that's mint.
Yes, 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 definitely.
You don't want mint growing.
Take over the world.
Growing in your soil. Well, I tell you what, our guest today, Aaron Presley, is the herb garden horticulturist at Olbrich Gardens, manages the wildflower and pond gardens at Olbrich as well. I'm Larry Mueller with Aaron Presley for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. We've zeroed in a little on herbs, but we're taking all kinds of plant questions with our guest today, Aaron Presley. She is the herb garden horticulturist at Olbrich Gardens in Madison. She also manages the wildflower and pond gardens there. Talking about growing, using, and preserving herbs and all other kind of plant questions that you might have. So join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Jill looked up the tarragon thing, or maybe it was Dave, and found that Russian tarragon loses its flavor as it matures. That may be a problem. Apparently French or Mexican tarragon doesn't.
Sounds good.
News to me, so it was good to see that. We have Kay in Fond du Lac with something for us. Hi, Kay.
Hello there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So my question is just overarching. I have varied luck with seeds, so I was just wondering if you can recommend what a good seed source is. I'd like to grow some basil in my house, and just overall, where do you recommend getting seeds from?
Well, there are so many great seed suppliers out there, so I still encourage you to kind of, you know, shop around and try different sources. But I would say if you're looking for a good one-stop shop for a wide variety of seeds, I would go with Johnny's Selected Seeds. That's a seed company in Maine, I believe they are, and they do some of their own breeding, and they also supply a lot of wholesale growers, so all of their seeds are germination tested prior to leaving their shipping facilities.
Yeah,
so Johnny's is a really good option, and they have a huge selection. Another place that we really like to use at Olbrich is a little outfit out of Missouri, and that is Baker Creek Heirloom Seeds, and they go all over the world collecting, you know, both kind of run-of-the-mill seeds and also some really obscure and different interesting herb seeds from, you know, across the globe. And we've always had real nice luck with their seeds as well. So those would be two good options for starters.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. MJ had called in and left a message. Where can she get seeds to plant chia? And also, will you share your recipe for limeade?
Sure. I certainly could share the recipe for limeade. And I think the best place to look for that is I know the Herb Fair will be posting the handouts from all of the speakers. So if you would access the Madison Herb Society website, they're going to be posting all the handouts, and they have all of the recipes from both my tea class and I think probably the Indian cooking class as well. But just kind of shorthand, last night I was in my kitchen making a big mess, and I juiced about 20 limes. So that made maybe 2 cups of lime juice, and then I added maybe about 1 cup of sugar, and then I was using a 1/2-gallon mason jar, so I just topped it off with water, and then I added maybe, I think if you did like 3 tablespoons of chia would be a good amount for that amount of limeade. And the chia seeds, to be perfectly honest, I'm not sure if you're able to order those. A northern strain that would be hardy and be able to set seed here in Wisconsin early enough, but I do typically give out a little bit of samples of those at my tea classes. So specifically, I do a tea class in summer at Olbrich, and I try to give a few samples out then. So that might be a nice way if you can sneak into one of those classes, and I'll could get you a little teaspoon or so.
You're not handing any out tomorrow?
Nope. I think I would have to force my volunteers to do many hours of seed sifting to supply enough chia seed for the herb fair.
Okay, there you go. Let's turn to the phones again and to Diane in Hubbleston. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for your wonderful show. Unfortunately, we cannot be at your program tomorrow, although my son wishes he could. Is there a way we can access it once you're done?
Is it videotaped? Or
I'm not sure if it is videotaped. I kind of doubt that it would be videotaped, but I know the Madison Herb Society is posting all of the handouts, so that would have all of the recipes and the general overview of the tea talk that I'm doing on their website after the herb fair is over. Otherwise, okay. You would be more than welcome to email me, and I could send it directly to you. My email is E. Presley, so that's E-P-R-E-S-L-E-Y, at cityofmadison.com.
Cityofmadison.com. And Diane, you had a question about drying herbs?
Well, my son really got into it this summer, and mostly for making tea. So when he went to school this year, he took quite a few pots of everything from thyme to mint, and his mint plant is dying, and I did not even know you could kill mint.
Oh.
Do you have any tips for him? We did just purchase a grow light.
Well, that'll help. I mean, is it in a south-facing window? Because
no, it is in a east, kind of northeast.
That's probably the worst.
That could be difficult. And one thing that is nice to remember anytime you're moving a plant, we were kind of talking with the rosemary before, anytime you're moving a plant from completely outside in the full sun to inside, it helps to go in kind of baby steps. So maybe if you're trying that again next year, move it into a little bit shadier outdoor location before you bring it inside where it's really getting cut off from a lot of that natural light.
And then drying, oh, I'm sorry, it's dying. I thought it was drying herbs that he was talking about. It was really about dying mint. So I'm sure the grow light's going to be a big help.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be your friend. I have a grow light that I just leave on my houseplants and my Christmas cacti and my amaryllis all year long, and they're just so much happier than if they were even, you know, even in the sunniest window, a little bit of extra light can't hurt.
Yeah, there you go, Diane. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's go to Patrick in Madison. Hi, Patrick.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I have, my wife and I have a hibiscus plant that we absolutely love, but it's gone through some trouble lately, and we were wondering about starting a new version of the plant from a cutting, and we've tried it in the past, but we've had difficulty getting that going. Can you give me some tips on that?
Well, I could not personally speak to that issue, but I would say if you are having difficulty with cuttings, you know, one thing that's important with a cutting is always to keep it consistently moist. So if you have those cuttings in a tray or a little pot, you want the humidity around them to be high. So usually it helps to take like a plastic bag or some sort of clear cover and put that over the top so that the moisture all stays right there around the pot. And the other thing that might be helpful is getting a little tub of like a commercial rooting hormone, which I think you could buy at like a, you know, good sized garden center. And that's basically like a little powder that you contains plant hormones that would facilitate rooting. And you would stick your cutting in that powder before you stick it in the potting soil. So both of those things might be good tips. I don't know if those are things you've pursued before. Yeah.
Yeah. If you haven't done that before, those are definitely good things to follow. Thank you for calling. Don in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Don.
Yes. Good morning. I was wondering if you had in your garden any epizote. It's a plant which Diane Kennedy in her famous books on the cooking of regional cooking in Mexico says a no self-respecting Mexican cook would ever prepare beans without tossing in a sprig or two of epizote. She mentions it's known in Central Park as in New York as a weed. It was known in the South as worm seed, where the seed was gathered to form into cakes and given to children as vermifuge. But you can grow it here in Eau Claire, and I'm sure you could grow it in
other parts of the
Madison
state.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah, epizote?
Yeah, right. I had 2 or 3 years ago, I grew a Mexican-themed garden in the herb garden. So I grew all different Mexican herbs and spices and vegetables, as well as flowers native to Mexico. And one of the things that we did grow was the epizote, which was very easy to grow from seed. It's actually related to like lamb's quarters or goose foot. So you know, picture those lamb's quarters, the huge weeds that grow in your yard, and how easy they are to grow. It was about that easy to grow. Very vigorous, and the flavor is kind of like a deep, almost resinous, piney flavor a little bit. So I think it is used frequently for, definitely for cooking beans. Goes well with like mushrooms or poblano peppers.
Yeah, that sounds great. Don, thank you so much. Appreciate your call. Brian from Wausau called in to say he and his wife had a Bob Ross chia pet hen. They used the seeds that came with it, and when it ran its course, they tried chia seeds from their pantry, and they grew just as well.
Oh, nice. Now that is a good tip. I love it.
There you go. Thank you for that, Brian. Appreciate it. Lois in Menominee Falls. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I planted an Althea shrub next to our patio. It is doing much better than I expected. It's about 6 feet tall, 3 feet wide, and now it blocks the view of everything in the yard behind it. So my questions are, can I prune it down about a foot? And can I also remove some of the branches to thin it out a bit? Or if not, then can I move the bush, and how would I go about doing that?
Hi. Yeah, I think that is definitely a good candidate for some pruning, especially when you're saying like you're only going to cut a foot off, not like you need to cut it in half or, you know, cut it down to the ground or anything like that. Usually the rule of thumb for pruning shrubs is you don't want to remove any more than like a quarter or a third of the height at any one time, but that sounds pretty, you know, that foot sounds pretty reasonable for you. Thinning it out too, like you were mentioning, is a really good idea for a lot of shrubs. So you're going to look for any branches that are crossing or rubbing on each other or broken, those are going to be the first ones you're going to remove. If you were thinking about transplanting that, I have never personally transplanted an Althea, but I would say doing that in the springtime is probably a good bet. And then even then, it can help to prune a little bit when you are transplanting, just so you don't have quite the full amount of leaves that that plant is trying to produce on the reduced root system.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Suzanne in Stoughton emailed that she's trying to establish more native plants in her yard and was given some milkweed pods. How can she get them to grow next year? Also, she got two small wisteria plants this year still in the pots. Could she how should she overwinter them? So a couple things going there. First, the milkweed pods.
All right. So I'm not sure exactly which species of milkweed you would be having there, but I think that would be a pretty good candidate for just direct sowing. A lot of our native temperate plants really benefit from some cold before their seeds are going to be able to germinate in the spring, because they need to sense that like seasonal fluctuation. So I would maybe find a little protected area outside and sow them kind of shallowly, right at, you know, almost just at surface level. Maybe you could throw just a little bit of mulch or something over the top to mark the spot and insulate them just a little bit, and then just look for those seeds to sprout in the spring.
And then the small wisteria plants in pots, still in the pots, what about overwintering them?
Ooh, it's getting to be pretty late to be planting, you know, planting things out in your yard and expecting she wants to overwinter them in the pots.
Yeah, she wants to well, I suppose you could bury the pots.
Yeah, maybe bury the pots, or maybe even just pull them into like a unheated garage and try to overwinter them
That's probably
way
what I
through
do.
The winter. Yeah, I think that might be your best bet.
And by the way, you could join in too, 1-800-642-1234, the number to call. Frances in Muskego, your turn. Thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hello, I got lilies and I'm going to have to move them because I'm downsizing. And I can see all the dead stalks up there. And I want to know if I should dig them up and transplant them now or wait till spring. I dug up some and they just come right off the bulb, the stem. So I don't know what to do.
You know, honestly, I think either of those options would be fine. Right now is nice because, like you said, you can still see those old stems. And if you were, you know, buying lily bulbs, you'd be easily planting them right now, too. So I don't see any problem with moving those right now.
Yeah. Go right ahead, Francis. Thank you. Roger emailed to say that there are quite a few chili peppers that can grow over the winter indoors. Ahi, he mentions Rakoto, Lakoto, among others, can even do well in homes that get chilly at night. These particular peppers evolved in the Andes Mountains, and they're perennials there. So another
Sounds
thing
good.
To try.
did he say the ahi peppers was uh-huh. The ahi peppers. I'm familiar with those from, again, my little Mexican cooking phase that I went through. Well, I cook Mexican food frequently, but the Mexican garden that we grew. And those ahi peppers are really interesting. They are amongst the oldest peppers that have evidence of human cultivation. They're like a very, very ancient crops, and they have some really interesting citrusy flavors that are kind of unique amongst peppers. So, yeah, they sound great for inside.
Yeah, that's great, Roger. Thank you so much. Terry would like to know what herbs are good for pollinators.
Oh, you know, a lot of herbs, pretty much any flowering herb is going to be real pollinator magnets. Definitely basils, mints, you'll see a lot of honeybees on those. Thyme, when it flowers, is good. Parsley both has the flowers for nectar and is also a host for swallowtail larvae, as well as, I think, fennel. I would say the better question is, are there any herbs that are not good for pollinators? But yeah, so those would be some nice options there for you.
There you go. Angela in Richmond, Illinois. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I recently took some cones off of a local tamarack tree, and I want to grow them, and I don't know how to go about anything beyond taking the cones. And I feel like I should dry them out and shake out the seeds, but I don't know. I'm asking for your help.
All right, Erin, what do you think?
Well, I think collecting the cones, you're off to a good start there. I would say if you can shake the seeds out, great. Otherwise, you might need to do some sort of physical, almost like crushing of the cones to be able to release the seeds. And then, you know, those are all plants that propagate themselves out in the wild. So they're expecting, like we were saying before, with native plants needing to be exposed to like kind of the winter temperature fluctuation. So I would do about like we were mentioning with the other caller with her milkweed, find a little protected spot outside where you could sow them and keep an eye on them, sow them shallow, maybe throw a little mulch over the top for the winter, and then just see what comes up in the spring.
Yeah, there you go. You know, I just took another sip of the ginseng drink that you made for me, and that reminded me that you're going to be talking tomorrow at the annual Herb Fair, the Madison Herb Society. It's the 36th annual. It's tomorrow from 9 to 3 at Olbrich Botanical Gardens, and what a perfect time to be at the gardens anyway.
Oh, I mean, it's the so garden beautiful. Is just gorgeous right now. So please, if you come down to the Herb Fair, please take a spin around outside too.
And you're going to be talking about growing herbs for tea.
Right. So I'm giving a little class that is all about different types of herbs that can be used for herbal beverages. And we have some, you know, the more kind of traditional, if you think of like chamomile or mint teas, but then we have some kind of fun updated options. So we cover how to set up like an herbal cocktail station, which is always kind of a fun activity.
Yeah.
And then we'll also talk about, you know, some of the equipment and little gadgets that are helpful with those endeavors. We'll talk about drying herbs and kind of give you a full overview of what you're going to need to do to make your own herbal teas.
I lived in the Caribbean a while in Trinidad, and the Indian style of cooking is very prominent there. And so cooking with Indian herbs and spices, that's at 11:30 tomorrow, that appealed to me as well. The Indian cooking and probably a little tasting going on there, perhaps. And
we can only hope.
And then at 1:30, if you're interested in wreaths and swags from your herbal harvest, Master Gardener Joan Flynn will be talking about the art of wreath making using herbs and other unusual plants from the garden. So that's going to be pretty cool as well. So 9:30, 11:30, and 1:30, yeah, hardly have time to breathe in there for you going from one thing to the other.
Going to need to drink some ginseng tea to get through that.
You need to have some ginseng tea straight from our guest today, Erin Presley. Boy, what fun this has been. And I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It was really a lot of fun.
I really appreciate the opportunity.
We'll have you back. I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
I am always happy to spread the love of herbs.
And other things as well,
yes,
apparently.
You name it.
Ginseng, chia limeade. She's a font of information about all kinds of things here. Erin Presley is the herb garden horticulturist at Olbrich Gardens. She also manages the wildflower and pond gardens at Olbrich. Fun place to be, the annual herb fair tomorrow from 9 to 3 p.m. I hope you'll be there. Monday at this time, computer specialist Jesse LeGru will be back to talk about Facebook security, among other things. In the meantime, hey, I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and please stay listening because there's lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk.